You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
A low-income mom or father occasionally battling an addiction or illness faces many challenges, including losing custody of their children to the state. Even for those who have access to support and can overcome some of these issues, they still may permanently lose their children, and that's because their shelter allowance is reduced when a child is apprehended, often making it impossible to find an affordable home sufficient for the child's return. Lobat Sadra Hashemi is a lawyer for the Pivot Legal Society. She's been working on this issue for several years now, and she joins me by phone. Good morning, Lobat.
Good morning.
What is the key problem with the BC policy for shelter allowances, the problem that you're trying to get addressed and remedied?
So really, we have two arms of government that are working against each other. We have the Ministry of Housing and Social Development that has particular legislation and policy that says that when a parent loses their child to the Ministry of Children and Family Development, even though the child is in temporary care, that their amount that's designated for their shelter costs, their welfare shelter allowance, that can be reduced immediately or can be maintained only up to 3 months. And then the Ministry of Children and Family Development, Child Welfare, says, well, during the when a child is in temporary care, we want to do all we can to make sure that we can return them to the parent as long as the home is safe. So one arm of the government is saying, okay, parents, work with us, we're going to provide supports, we're going to try and have the child returned to you, and then the other is making it much more difficult for them to have the child returned because they're essentially the parent, because it's such a drop, like, for example, a single parent with one child, they're receiving $570 in shelter allowance. If the child is removed, that could go down to $370. So it's likely they would lose their housing, which would then pose a whole new obstacle for having the child to be returned to them.
Let's have a look at the situation of apprehension. What are the reasons usually that children are taken into care by the Ministry of Child Family Development, and about how long do they remain in their custody?
So Pivot did a report in 2008 called Broken Promises, and when we were doing that report, we found out that I think it was approximately in less than 10% of the cases was the reason for removal because of physical abuse and less than 1% because of sexual abuse. So the vast majority of cases really related to parents who may be battling addiction, may have a mental illness, there may be domestic violence, situations where with support they could have the child returned to them. Because it's important to distinguish between when children are in temporary care and when they're in permanent care of the state. When they're in temporary care, the goal from the perspective of the Ministry of Children and Family Development is to work with the parent to have them returned. When they end up in permanent care, that goal, now the Ministry of Children and Family Development is seeking to have the child find an adoptive parent for the child. So they're no longer trying to have the child return to their birth family. So that's a major difference, and that's what we've said in the complaint is if you're going to think about when you should be reducing the shelter allowance, it has nothing really to do with the fact of, you know, 3 months in temporary care. It really has more to do with whether or not the child is in permanent care of the state or temporary care. As long as they're in temporary care, they still will need, hopefully, a home to return to. When they're in permanent care, that's a bit different.
Mm-hmm. So what have you done so far to try and get this policy remedied?
Right. So this is an issue that advocates and parents have been talking about for years. And I think it was in February of 2008 we met for the first time with a few representatives from, at the time it was the Ministry of Employment and Income Assistance, and explained this issue among other issues. And then we wrote them a follow-up letter the following month, and then we didn't hear anything. And then in January of 2009, we wrote again to the Ministry of Housing and Social Development and basically said, this is a huge issue, it's easy to resolve. And we got a letter back the following month that basically said that they needed to do some more research on the issue. So that was 15 months ago. And it's not an issue that's very complex because it's obvious that this would happen. It's obvious that the shelter amount, if you reduce it, the parent is likely to lose their housing, and that's going to have an impact on whether they can have the child returned. So it's just this really absurd policy, and it shows what happens when two branches of government don't work together. And it's something that's really easy to resolve. If they just amended their regulations so that it stated that where a child is in temporary care, we maintain the shelter allowance, and if they go into permanent care, that's when it changes. So it's really simple, and it would have a huge impact for families if they made that change.
And I gather then that there is no cooperation or real synchronization effort on the part of these two ministries to reconcile their divergent mandates.
No, I mean, they definitely communicate with each other because they know exactly when a child is removed, and that's why, and that precipitates them to reduce the shelter amount. But in terms of actually working together for the best interest of the families, I don't think they're really doing that. I mean, when we did the report, Broken Promises, social workers from the Ministry of Children and Family Development will tell you that they hate this policy and legislation at welfare. It doesn't make any sense. And they often will write letters trying to convince them to maintain the amount for the family. Of course, social workers at the Ministry of Children and Family Development have huge caseloads. They're not going to do that in every case. And in any case, the policy only allows discretion up to 3 months. So after 3 months, the worker at welfare can't actually maintain it anymore, according to their policy, which doesn't make any sense because 3 months is not any... That's not a really relevant time period in the child welfare system. So there's nothing that turns on 3 months. And anybody that has done any work in the child welfare system knows that there's a huge amount of delays. So it's not like... And these delays relate to not things that are attributable to the parent. You know, it's things like scheduling court dates, wait lists for programs, just the huge caseloads of the social workers. All those cause delays. And so it's very common that the issue wouldn't be resolved within 3 months and that children stay in temporary care much longer than for 3 months.
So you're filing a complaint with the BC ombudsperson now. What's the strategy behind approaching that official?
So West Coast Leaf and Pivot Legal Society filed the complaint on behalf of four advocacy groups. So Battered Women Support Services, Downtown Eastside Women's Center, the Kettle Friendship Society, and Atira Resources Society. And all four of those advocacy groups work directly with parents who have interactions with both the income assistance system and the child welfare system. And the complaint is a systemic complaint. It's systemic in that it's not filed on behalf of one individual, but it's filed on behalf of these advocacy groups who have all had interactions with parents who've gone through this problem. I mean, the hard part of bringing it on behalf of an individual person, or if you bring a court challenge on behalf of an individual person, is it's a huge burden to bear for that person, and they're usually going through a really challenging time. And in this case, the policy on its face is just, it so obviously creates these problems that we didn't think it was necessary to have an individual, that we thought it would make sense to make a systemic complaint. The ombudsperson is charged with looking at policies and legislations that work, that are unfair or unjust, and this is definitely one that is. So that's why we filed it with them. We're hoping that they will, after they do their investigation, that they will make strong recommendations to the Ministry of Housing and Social Development, asking them to amend their regulations. Now, ideally, we'd hope, because that can be quite a lengthy process, we'd hope that the Ministry of Housing and Social Development would take the initiative to act on it now and not wait for potential recommendations from the ombudsperson.
And would it be also your hope that this can help raise public awareness of the issue beyond the advocacy groups that have to deal with it in an immediate situation day in, day out?
Yes, for sure. Actually, since we filed the complaint, we've received so many responses from people that don't have any interaction with the child welfare system or the income assistance system, who've written letters to Rich Coleman, the Minister of Housing and Social Development, asking him to make a change to this, because it is one of those things that just cries out for a change. It's just it just doesn't make any sense. It's just a really absurd policy. So we're hoping that with their efforts and the efforts of advocates and others working in this area, that they'll finally realize that this is something that needs immediate change.
In your complaint, you bring forth the issue that shelter allowance policy for children who are temporary wards of the state is unjust, oppressive, and improperly discriminatory and or unlawful. Could you explain what you're driving at with that proposition?
Sure. So basically, when a child is removed, the shelter amount goes down. The parent could possibly lose their housing, and this, the way that policy operates, means that it's not operating in the best interest of children. And that violates a lot of our requirements under law, and it also, both human rights law and international law, and it also, because those who are mainly impacted by the child welfare system are Aboriginal and single mothers, it's also discriminatory. It has a discriminatory impact on those families.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we certainly will encourage our listeners as well to advocate for this change of policy.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Lobat Sadra Hashemi. She's a lawyer for Pivot Legal Society, and if you'd like more information, you can visit their website, pivotlegal.org.